Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Paradigm Project. Today we are giving you the first episode of Season 6. I am Winter Varner, your host from last season and the same host this season. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, if they like to introduce themselves.
My name is Camila Gambino.
And I'm Spencer Cox.
We're just going to jump right in today, and we're talking about what some of our favorite quotes are. I'm going to get us started. My favorite quote is from Henry David Thoreau's Civil Disobedience. He says, "Under a government which imprisons any unjustly, the correct place for a just man is also prison." Do you guys have any thoughts about it?
Yeah, I think that that's a really good quote, Winter. And I think it really shows that you should stick to your morals, even if it's unfair.
I like to visualize things a little bit better by using examples. Mm-hmm. So could you provide a scenario where this would take place?
Yeah. So it actually is another quote, but I'm not sure what it's from. It was something that we discussed in my seminar class this year, that if there is a man in the water who's drowning, basically, right? And he has a log or a piece of driftwood that he's drifting on, but you're also drowning. If you take that piece of wood and you try to use it for yourself, then you have to give it back, right? It's if you take something from another person, if you go against your morals, even if it's in order to survive, then that's wrong. And it is you have to give it back, right? It's in the quote. And at the time, Henry David Thoreau, he lived in Missouri, I think, Missouri or Mississippi, but I believe it was Missouri. And they had laws that were like slavery laws. And he had a big conundrum with them that there were a lot of people who would say they were against slavery, but wouldn't really do anything to stop it. And so he committed tax fraud, but his reason was that he didn't want to pay the government that wasn't listening to him. He didn't want slavery. And so instead of supporting the government that continued to support slavery, he stopped and he went to prison for it. And he said that if I am a just man and I am standing up for what I believe in and I'm in prison, then any other just man should also be in prison. You shouldn't be free just by, like, squandering your morals. You know, your morals take the high ground over not being in prison.
I like your driftwood, your drowning man driftwood example, because it's definitely a choice that you would, a big choice you'd have to make in the moment. And so it's not like you are really the one making the choice. It's your fight, flight, freeze instincts, you know? If there was a man who was drowning and was floating on a piece of driftwood, would you push him off to take the wood so you can save yourself? But then that makes you bad because you're the one, you in your own action made that guy die. So I like your example. Thank you for that.
I like your example, Winter, and I think it was very well worded by both you and Spencer. I very much agree. I think it's wrong to support corrupt governments, and I think that if he was sent to jail for sticking up for his beliefs and not supporting things that were doing people harm and doing people wrong and taking a stand on what he says he supports, I think that it was wrong for him to go to prison, and I think that anyone else should be in prison as well to make it only fair.
Yeah. I have a question about the quote that I want to put forth to you guys. If a person were to cover up their morals or bury them so that they didn't have to go to prison, do you think that they would be truly free?
No. I think that hiding what you believe in and stuff like that would put so much of a weight on you as a person that you might as well just be in prison at that point. at that point, it kind of becomes like a mental and social prison within yourself and within your own beliefs.
I think your definition right there is basically saying, no, you're not free. Because mm-hmm. you're saying, like, if you are preventing yourself from doing this thing, mm-hmm. are you free?
Mm-hmm.
No, because you're not, because you aren't giving yourself the ability to do this thing.
Yeah.
So you're imprisoning yourself in that point.
Mm-hmm. I love the way that you put that, Cam.
Oh.
well, I like the way that you both put it. The imprisoning yourself and the way that Spencer said it, and the way that Cam said it, that it's a mental prison and a social prison. Is it better to put yourself through physical prison or mental prison?
I think in order to be truly free, you need to be able to express yourself freely without punishment. And at that point, I'd rather be in physical prison. Either way, it's equally as unfair and unjust.
I feel like we have just about wrapped up this quote. So, Cameron, would you like to unwrap yours?
I'd like to ask a question as well. If you can't stand up for your morals openly and publicly, are they truly your morals deep down? If you can't be open about them and you can't forwardly support something, do you truly support it? Or...
Well, I want to clarify really quick. Do you mean if you can't or you won't?
If you won't. Thank you for the clarification.
I appreciate the clarification, because if you're saying you can't stand up for your morals...
That's a different situation.
That means it is not in your ability to do this. Like, you would, I don't know, become a martyr or something. But saying you won't, that's different. Because won't is more like you fully have the ability to stand up for your morals, you just don't. Mm-hmm. And that means you would have to have your own good personal reason to, or at least, maybe not good, but at least a compelling reason to not stand up for yourself in that moment. And so, to answer your question, no, I don't think they are your morals. If you aren't participating in supporting your morals, are they your morals? No, I don't think so.
So then the question becomes, do you have to speak a moral for it to be moral? Or can it exist without being brought into action, right? And you said no. So you think that you can't have a moral unless you're doing something about it?
Yeah.
I have a different view, slightly. I think that you can still have a moral, but it isn't authentic. It's performative. Having that moral doesn't serve any purpose, but it doesn't make it less of a moral. I think it changes its value rather than its existence.
Okay, actually, you have kind of opened my eyes a little bit to that. But let's use Thoreau as a Thoreau?
Mm-hmm.
Thoreau. Okay, let's use Thoreau as an example. He believed that slavery was bad, obviously.
And he was wrong.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
You need to, like, soundbite that.
I don't
okay, sorry.
Slavery, I swear.
I want that to be my ringtone for every time you text me. Slavery was bad. He was wrong.
Okay.
I didn't mean that.
Okay.
So.
Sorry, I'm too far.
He believed. I'm getting there. Let's use Thoreau as an example. He believed that slavery was bad, right? And so he was taking part in showing that he knows slavery is bad. If he just didn't do anything, does that make his moral of, you know, slavery being bad, does that make it still there if he just doesn't do anything about it?
I mean, it's like the classic question, right? If a tree falls in a forest and nobody hears it, did it really fall? Yes, it did. It still fell. The circumstances are different, right? And it comes back to the performative thing I was saying, that the reason that the moral has to exist is different. The value that that moral brings to the world is different, but it's still a moral. It's still there, but it's performative rather than authentic.
Okay, I see what you're getting at. You're kind of, you're making a lot more sense. And
it's like being held as a trophy, right? Where rather than having this moral because you believe in it and doing something about it to support it, you have this moral because you just do.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I definitely agree. I think you can have beliefs and morals that you don't do anything about. It just makes them less strong by not taking action. And I think beliefs and morals and things like that say a lot about who a person is as a human being, but as do their actions, which is where it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you believe in something but you don't do anything about it, then how much are you willing to sacrifice for that belief? And I think in the case of Thoreau, he was willing to go to prison for his belief that slavery was wrong and bad. And I think that that shows that he really stood for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like we're saying, just because you have a moral, even if it's performative, doesn't mean that it's doing anything. You know, it's better to suffer for your morals, like Thoreau was saying, than to do nothing and instead suffer inside. It's better to suffer outwardly than to suffer inwardly, by Thoreau's quote.
All right, so I think we've just about wrapped up Winter's quote. I think that conversation went very well, in fact. Cam, would you like to unwrap yours?
Yeah. For my quote, I chose something from one of my favorite books called Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. It seems like we are all in such a hurry that we never stop to look at how we got here or where we're going. It's said by Clarice McClellan, a character in the book who... My quote is, "It seems like we're all in such a hurry that we never stop to think how we got here or where we're going."
What's your quote from?
It's from Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. It was a book that was written in the 50s. It was set in a futuristic dystopian society where reading is illegal and almost all cases of human empathy or human interaction in general have been replaced by robots and futuristic technologies.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. Was this a note just written by the author or was there a specific character?
It was said by the character Clarice McClellan. She was a 17-year-old girl who really valued things like conversation and books and reading and walking, which was really out of place and illegal in that society.
So it sounds like, from the way that you explained it, she's kind of seen as a rebel in their society, where in our society she'd just be seen as a normal girl. Do you value the way that she acted?
Yeah, I think she was a really important character. She was written to be against the rules, and I think that that's important to stand up for your morals, like in the quote that you said earlier, Winter.
So do you think that you value her more for her love of nature, or what you were saying, her standing up for her morals even when she's seen as different?
I think a little bit of both. I think it's really honorable and respectable to stand up for yourself in a society that is against what she thought was important. I also think in such a fast and high-tech and almost artificial society like that, it was really important for her to acknowledge how beautiful nature is and the world that we live in and how beautiful a human conversation can be. I think that's why I like that quote so much. It kind of reminds me to slow down and to recognize small things that make me happy.
I like that. Actually, one of my favorite little things to enjoy is just driving past this building that makes fresh bread. in the morning and you smell the scent of fresh bread. I love it so much.
It's nice, you know, to think about it that way. It's like stop and smell the roses. It seems like a cliche from the outside, but it really is valuable to stop and appreciate what it is to be human.
I think we should get rid of the stop and smell the roses quote and replace it with stop and smell the fresh bread.
Interesting.
Winter is not interested.
No, not at all. Fahrenheit 451 is an amazing book, and Clarice is my favorite character.
Me too. So. I think it's a great book. It's really stood the test of time. It was a really cool read seeing how old and how long ago the book was written. A lot of the material in the book really was still relatable, even decades after it was written.
It's kind of scary to see how some of the things that the book predicted have come true in our life now. I mean, like, even just with the rise of AI or AI websites like ChatGPT, we're becoming more like the people who are in the TV room and have their little earbuds in, I don't remember what they're called, shells?
Hornets.
Right? We're becoming more like the people who have the shells in all the time and are stuck in the TV room and who have become desensitized to outside stimuli and prefer that which is just produced for us. We need to remember those human pleasures, like returning to nature, taking your walk, smelling the bread factory, taking your time to be human. I think that in our current society, just sitting back and being human isn't really valued as much. It's kind of seen as a waste of time or wasting resources, you know? But we shouldn't only value work or play. We should value getting to relax and to be human.
Well said, Winter. I feel like that was very insightful.
Spencer, would you like to introduce your quote now?
Yeah, sure. My quote is, "Education should not be the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire." It is a quote by William Butler, and I feel very strongly about this. So strongly, in fact, I have done more than one oral exam about this quote. I describe that education and learning are two different things. Education is your desire to keep learning. Learning is just you receiving information.
So education is the desire to just receive information?
Yeah. Education is your want to keep going.
Would it be better to say that education and learning are both the same action, but one is motivated and the other isn't?
Not necessarily, because you can still be getting an education, but also learning.
So you're saying education is step one and learning is step two.
Yeah, but if you're just receiving step two, then that is unmotivated filling of information in your brain.
I'm confused because education isn't an action, right? It's like, it's a noun.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you first get education and then you learn and not you learn first and you become educated later?
Well, there is educated, educate. Those are not nouns. Education is the noun.
Do you become educated first and then you start learning? I'm just a little bit confused by your word tenses. Because is it I'm educated and then I learn? Or I learn and then I'm educated? Or you can be educated or you can learn, but they're different things. Which one? Which is it?
Education and learning are sort of the same thing. So, you have to be educated to want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just learning, like, let's say you go to a class that you don't like, and you have no motivation to do anything in that class.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime the teacher tells you anything, that's just learning. That's you receiving information, putting it in your brain,
mm-hmm.
in the quotes case, the pail, filling
yeah.
the pail.
Yeah.
But if it's education. Mm-hmm. You want to go to that class. You show up. You receive all of the information that your mentor is telling you.
Yep.
And then you strive to go beyond what they have told you to learn more.
Yeah, I guess where I'm really coming from is that it sounds like you're saying education and learning are both taking in information. So they're the same thing. But the difference is that one of the times you want to learn and the other time you don't want to learn. So is it like you're educated and then you learn? Or is it you're either educated or you're learning? Or do they go hand in hand? Because the first thing that you said was that it was like a step one, right? You have to be educated first. But how can you be educated if you've never learned anything? If you've never learned how to respect other opinions, or listen to other people, or think critically, how can you be educated?
I think that it's if you want to learn how to respect other people and whatnot, as you said.
Yeah, so then it becomes the desire, the motivation, is the difference between learning and being educated, right?
Yes.
You were saying it first, right? Education is wanting to learn. And learning is receiving information, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's saying you learn, but if you want to, then it's education.
Yes.
So education would be the desire to receive information, and learning is just receiving information. So I'm trying to clarify if you think that it's a step-by-step process, or if they're two separate things.
I don't think it's a step-by-step process. They are two separate things, because it's like education is learning, learning is not an education. Square is a rectangle is not a square.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Man, I'm really glad I didn't have you on my oral exam panel. Jeez.
I would have been helpful.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you answered really well. You did. A lot of, like, what we practice during our oral exams is just listening to questions and really answering exactly what they're asking instead of just jumping around it to prove our point, right? Which I feel like you did well. I like where you're coming from, too, on that point. A square is a rectangle, but a rectangle isn't necessarily a square.
No, a rectangle is not a square.
Well, it can be.
Only
it's like every square is a rectangle, but not every rectangle is a square, right? The definition of a rectangle is that it has four 90-degree angles inside of it, right?
And
that it has four sides.
Two pairs of parallel sides.
Yes. The definition for a square is the same. The only difference is that every side is the same length.
Mm-hmm.
A square will always be a rectangle because it always fits the dimensions for a rectangle.
Yes.
But unless a rectangle has four equal sides, it's not a square, right?
Yes.
So it's interesting to see where you're coming from on how one thing will always be another thing, but that doesn't mean that the other thing is the first.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see how small differences actually have such a large impact. The small difference of motivation is the entire difference between learning and becoming educated.
Mm-hmm.
I think Winter has a really good way of putting things. She speaks very educatedly, but at the same time, I think I understand more what Spencer is saying.
Hold on, wait. Is educatedly a word? For context, I'm asking Siri.
Eloquently is.
Eloquently is definitely a word. Educatedly. Hey,
Siri told me.
I think the way Winter puts things is very understandable, but I also can see where Spencer's coming from. And I think that there's a big difference in learning and becoming educated, just because, like, anybody can become educated, anybody can do that, anybody can learn. But there is a significant difference of motivation and passion that is required to become fully educated instead of just learning things.
How willing are you to learn? How much do you want it?
Exactly. And I think that's where the filling of the pail versus the lighting of the fire comes in. I feel like filling of a pail is, it feels at least to me, more useless and mundane, routine, boring, and a lot of classes and a lot of schools can feel that way. Lighting a fire could last forever, and it's passionate, and it's, like, strong, and it's, like, a desire to learn things and to become educated.
One way I described it in one of my orals was, if you, hypothetically, let's use wood as information. If you fill a pail full of wood, it's the same thing. It's just a pail full of wood, right? But if you put that wood into a fire, then it expands off of that and grows and gets bigger and burns. Burn, baby, burn.
That was gross.
You know, on Cam's point, you said that it feels almost useless, like filling the pail, right? But I feel like it's the exact opposite, at least coming from a personal standpoint. Because filling the pail, right, with water, with milk, you're doing that to feed your family, to make sure they have something to drink. Or you're doing that to work on a project you need water for, or you need to sharpen your axe, so you need water, right? It feels like it's for a use. But lighting a fire feels more like it's passionate, right? It's for passion. It's also for a reason, but it's not expressly for a reason. It doesn't have to be for a reason. But filling a pail feels like it has to be for a reason, which I feel like does relate to education a lot. In modern times, the way that education is perceived is that you become educated so you can get a job, so you can make money, so you can live comfortably, right? But I feel like education can just exist, to be pretty, to burn, to be passionate. And it doesn't always have to fulfill that task list of this is to feed my family or this is to get a job.
Yeah.
That was a really good analogy. I agree. I think a lot of people our age don't value education itself just as it is, more as to get into college or to get a job or to be rich when you're older. But education can be a beautiful thing if you just leave it as it is.
With the fire analogy specifically, if you keep feeding it wood, it's going to continue to grow and get bigger and whatnot. But if you stop, it eventually burns out and just turns into ash, which I believe is the same with education. If you keep going and growing upon that, then you're going to want to learn more. You're going to want to keep going. But if you sort of stop and back away, then it's not really a huge passion of yours anymore. Like, Cam, you're very big into ice skating, right? If you had stopped ice skating for like a year or two, right? How motivated would you be to go back on the ice?
Well, when COVID first hit, I did have to stop skating for about a year and a half. And I feel like it just fueled my motivation even more to get back on the ice and to come back better than I even was before. I think that really was the point of where I could have stopped. I could have quit, and it could have just been, oh, when I was a kid, I skated, blah, blah, blah. Or turned that passion for skating and that love for skating into a career for myself and into a real profession in the future outside of just skating recreationally. Mm-hmm. And my way up to skating and competing at such a high level, and I know that this is what I'm going to do with my future and with my life, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
But having all of this time where you couldn't get out on the ice, that is your fire burning out. As soon as you get back on the ice again, you're just fueling it a frickjillion load of wood, you know?
I feel like you don't necessarily have to keep feeding the fire for it to keep burning. I don't think that you lose education when you stop pouring time into it. You just don't gain more, you know? Like, there's eternal flames, right? And as long as they have oxygen, they keep burning. As long as they have that chemical requirement, they won't stop. I feel like you don't always need to be adding more and more wood. You don't always need to be constantly pushing yourself to go farther. You don't lose what you've learned just because you used to be passionate about it. Mm-hmm. Let's say 5 years ago, you liked this band, right? And you memorized 5 of their songs, like down to the point, every single song lyric. You don't lose what you learned from those songs after 5 years of not listening to them.
You're still going to know all the words by heart.
Yeah, and even if it's not the words, maybe you'll have what those songs meant to you. It'll never leave you. Just because you're not as passionate about it and you're not feeding the fire anymore doesn't mean you lose it.
Well, after the fire burns out and is no longer burning, the ash is still there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're using wood as the example of information, then it's still there.
Wait. Is wood information or motivation? Because I've heard both. Are you feeding it information, or are you feeding your motivation to the fire?
I thought that earlier I said the wood was information.
I feel like if you're just feeding it information, though, it's not education.
But the fire is the motivation. The fire getting bigger is your passion.
So you're motivated by the information? I thought it was the other way around, that you were motivated and then you got information. So the information would be the fire.
You were motivated to seek that information. Yeah, the information starts the fire and then boom.
Guys, I feel like I look like a huge idiot right now.
No,
you just don't. I feel like Winter is just a flipping Einstein genius over here. And
well, just hear me out, okay? If the wood is motivation, and you are giving your motivation to get that education, right? Then information is what comes with the fire. That the fire is education, right? And the information would just be the ashes or the sparks that it gives off. If the wood is information and you are just seeking information, then you aren't going to get motivation from that unless you have passion first. So it would seem that the wood has to be the passion. It has to be your motivation.
But also, a fire does not start with just wood. That weird thing where you rub two sticks together and it bursts into flames, that's not a thing.
Yeah. Well, exactly, right? You need a spark. And what is that spark? Motivation. The fire.
Yes, but a spark is not wood. A spark is energy, and so is the fire.
And where does the energy come from? It comes from rubbing the wood. It comes from your conscious.
It doesn't come from rubbing the wood.
It comes from your
energy
conscious
comes from
choice.
Because rubbing the wood makes friction, and friction is
yes,
the energy.
Yes, it comes from the conscious. It comes from the conscious choice to make friction, the motivation you were talking about. So if the wood is your motivation, and what comes from it is education, the education is what comes from the friction, which is what comes from your motivation to rub those sticks together, to
but
make that fire.
Didn't you just say that the spark was your motivation?
It comes from your motivation. It's not your motivation. It's different. Okay.
Guys,
okay.
I feel like my brain is losing brain cells
Let me walk you through it. Okay. You have wood. You're feeding it to the fire. That is your motivation.
Mm-hmm.
We just established that wood was the info.
That's
right,
what Spencer
though.
Was saying.
He's right, though.
Spencer was saying that the wood is information, and when you feed information to your motivation, then it gets bigger. But I'm saying it's the opposite. You have motivation first, and you feed it information, and it gets bigger. You have motivation. You rub it together. The
okay.
spark,
Hold
the
on.
Spark, let me finish. The spark to look for information. Right? It comes from your motivation first.
I think that my ADHD made me comprehend about maybe 2% of that.
He's not talking in the mic.
Yeah. I think that you have to start with motivation, and the seek for information comes later. Why do you disagree?
You do have to have some sort of information or knowledge about this thing to keep going. You can't just be like, I've never heard of, let's use ice skating as an example. I've never ever heard of ice skating ever before a day in my life. I want to do that for the rest of my life right now. But you can't do that because you have no idea what this thing is. How do you know you want to keep going?
Okay.
But if you know about it, if you know, like, I don't know, Cam, give me some cool ice skating terms.
some cool ice skating terms. Okay, well, say you've never started before and you want to get into lessons. There are levels in ice skating, kind of like gymnastics. They start with the basics, basic 1 through basic 6. In some countries, like Australia, they do basic 1 through basic 8. De Bono would know if he was an ice skater.
Sorry.
There's different types of skating. There's synchronized skating, pairs, ice dance, solo. There's tests to compete at certain levels that you have to pass before you can. There's auditions to get into ice theaters and showcase on ice. Mm-hmm. There's different categories of competition. There's so many things that if you didn't skate, you wouldn't know about.
See, now if you have never ice skated before or haven't even seen somebody ice skate, mm-hmm. how would you want to do all of those things she just said?
Because they're awesome, and who wouldn't?
Mm-hmm.
Me. I'm so bad at ice skating, it's not even funny.
You don't have the motivation.
That's the thing.
All you have is the information. Mm-hmm. The fire can't come from the information alone. I feel like we should update our analogy. Instead of just looking at it like there's a spark and there's a wood, and from that...
a wood.
Instead of just looking at it like there's a spark and there's wood, and from that comes fire... I feel like we have to add the oxygen to it, like I was saying earlier, the eternal flame. The wood is the motivation, the oxygen is the information, and the fire is education.
Can I add something? I feel like in this analogy, it would make more sense to have motivation be the oxygen, because so long as you have motivation for something, you can continue to fuel your education, fuel that fire. So long as you have oxygen.
Yeah, a fire can't burn without oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you can't learn things without the motivation to learn them.
Yeah, that would be a good way to look at it if we are considering both the oxygen and the wood.
The wood being the information.
Yes, because you don't need wood to have a fire. You could start a fire on leaves. You could start a fire on lava. It starts on other things, but you have to have oxygen. Always. Mm-hmm.
Yes. What we have come to terms with is that the energy is you completing your hunger for information. But the oxygen is your motivation to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The spark is you doing it. And then what you're burning is the information.
I would say that... the fire, right? That's education. The spark that starts the fire is the satisfaction for that desire to understand.
There we go. Now I feel like we've...
We've come to a conclusion that makes sense.
All agreed on something.
Yeah.
See, it's starting to make sense now.
Right. I think it's good that we're taught to have discussions like these where they can be confusing and it can be, you know, kind of a back and forth thing, but we're taught to be mature about it here at Paradigm.
Well, if we had just cut off that conversation 5 minutes earlier because we felt like it was pointless, we never would have come to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they say in Notes on Dialogue, right? It has the 10...
Who is that by? Do you know?
Notes on Dialogue?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Where's my phone? How do I Google?
But it's like they say in Notes on Dialogue in one of the 10 sanctions of a good conversation, right? Is that you should always try to agree to agree. You never leave just agreeing to disagree because then you never find truth. And that's what the point of a productive, good conversation is looking for the common truth.
I feel like Cam really should read all of these readings that we have discussed, such as Notes on Dialogue, Civil Disobedience, etc.
Yeah, I started here at Paradigm about a month or two ago. And I've never read any of these things.
To be honest,
before.
It's a little surprising you're on the podcast.
Yeah. I think DeBono just likes me.
To be fair, you are also a ninth grader. Like this is the beginning of your Paradigm education, and you're just getting started. But you can already see the benefits. No matter how many books you've read or how many discussions you've participated in, you've been in this environment where you can see the Paradigm learning system having an effect on you.
And it is so much, like, different than any school that I've been to. I've been to 5 or 6 schools, and there's nothing even close to how I've been taught here at Paradigm, even though it's only been a month and a half, 2 months. I feel like it's so different, and that's such a good thing, because education can get really tiring when it doesn't have that spark, that fire, that passion, the want to learn.
I have one more question for all of you guys, including myself. What's your favorite reading that we've done here at Paradigm, whether it's a book or I don't know, something that your mentor just went to the library and printed out real quick and handed out. Yeah, what would be your favorite?
My favorite reading is definitely Fahrenheit 451.
My favorite book that I've read here, the one that's been most impactful, was probably Wild Swans by Yung Chang. If you haven't read it, you absolutely should. It talks about like the horrors of Mao's rise to power in China, and it's crazy, but it is so good to see how people really strive to find education, to find learning, and to become their own people.
All right. Well, I have a very different opinion from you guys because I did not really like either of those. But my favorite reading was, believe it or not, The Chronicles of Narnia. We read all, I believe there's 7 books. We read all 7 books in my 9th grade year with Mr. Ellsworth, and it was such an interesting way to start out my entire life here at Paradigm, because I felt like everyone's probably seen or at least heard of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, right? Mm-hmm. But how many people actually know that there's like 7 books in this series? Who can name a single other book in that series? Exactly. I could name them all in chronological order, and it's awesome. Anyway, I think it was a really fun and interesting way to start out here at Paradigm, because you'd think that we would be reading something that seems more educational, you could say, such as Fahrenheit 451 or one of the classics, but I'm not saying Narnia is not a classic, but
yeah.
I really enjoyed that one.
That's really interesting. I'm glad to see your guys' perspectives on that. And Cam, especially since we talked about yours earlier and why you feel so connected to it. It's great to see the different places that we're coming from. It looks like we are coming to the end of our recording time. We like to do this thing on the Paradigm Project where we offer a challenge to our listeners at home. This could be something like, oh, go read a book, or sit outside for 5 minutes and meditate. I have one, right? Find your favorite quote. Any book, doesn't matter how scholarly it is. Any movie, any song. Find your favorite quote and think about it. Think about why you like it. Not just what it's saying, but why you like it. Metacognition it's beneficial. And getting to talk to these guys, at least about my favorite quote, has helped me to think about how I think and why I think. And it's a good exercise.
I think that's really, really smart, Winter. Yeah, that's a great challenge.
Go home, pick your favorite quote, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Paradigm Project. If you like what we talked about today, rate us 5 stars on iTunes and help us participate in the great conversation. If you want to talk to us about something, you can email podcast@paradigmhigh.org, or you can DM us on Instagram @theparadigmpod. See you next time.